Yo, what's up? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Monday, June 22nd, 2020. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing Adeoye Jr. And joining me is twitch.tv/FM3_ Fran Verbella III.
My name's gotten even longer. It's all my official legal name now, Blessing.
Dude, it's great to have you. I feel like this is the first time we've hosted together on KFGD.
I think it actually is. So I'm excited. It's funny. We've definitely been on Gamescast before in the past, but I don't remember doing this yet. So excited.
Yeah, man. How you been? It's been a while.
Been good. You know, it's, I think, the usual 2020 response. You know, we're all doing as well as we can do.
Surviving.
Another crazy weekend, another beginning to a crazy week. But, you know, there's still super awesome and interesting game news out there. So I'm always happy to be on the show.
How are you passing your time nowadays? It's just a lot of video games, a lot of streaming.
Yeah, a lot of streaming, a lot of video games, and still some cooking in there. But I have to say, it varies.
Oh, which
but you know, I've been trying to perfect my curry recipe, my vindaloo recipe. So I've been working on that, and then I always make pasta sauce somewhere in there because I'm a bachelor, and so it's nice to just like do all that ahead of time, and then I have a few days of food ready to go. So other than that, though, eating and video games, maybe not the best, you know, lineup.
I mean, honestly, same. I mean, I'm not cooking, but I'm doing a lot of post-mating and a lot of playing Last of Us and other video games, which we'll talk about actually on this episode, because today's stories include Rocksteady working on Suicide Squad, SpongeBob reviews, and a whole lot more, because this is Kinda Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/KindaFunnyGames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, roosterteeth.com, or you can listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kinda Funny Games Daily. To be a part of the show, head to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, where bronze members or above get to write in, and silver members or above get the show ad-free with the exclusive daily post show. Housekeeping. It's been a super busy morning. I've been awake since 6 a.m., Barrett. By the way, Barrett's running the show, not Kevin. Barrett's back.
Yo, what up?
This is a very Barrett episode, and so Barrett, it's awesome to have you here because we're talking about some Barrett-ass things.
I'm excited to talk about some Barrett-ass things, you know what I'm saying?
For sure, man. I've been up since 6 a.m. because this morning we woke up, we did a Smash presentation reaction, which we'll talk about in a second. We did a reaction to Crash 4. I wasn't part of that, but, you know, that was a thing that happened. There was a day of the dev stream. There's a whole bunch of things happening, but let's go through them. So we had a few live reactions that are now available on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. Tim and I, of course, reacted to the Smash presentation featuring a new ARMS character. Tim Barrett and IGN's Jonathan Dornbush reacted to that new trailer for Crash 4. Greg and Andy reacted to today's Day of the Dev stream. And Barrett's first impressions of SpongeBob SquarePants Battle for Bikini Bottom just went live. And that's all either already or soon hitting youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. We're also reacting live tomorrow morning because it's a crazy week. Tomorrow morning, we're reacting live to a Summer Game Fest stream. That's at 8 a.m., and that's with Greg, Tim, and me. So tune in for that. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Mohammed Mohammed, Connor Nolan, and Blackjack. Today, we're brought to you by Purple Mattress, but I'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. Time for some news. We have six stories today.
A baker's dozen.
And it's a jam-packed six stories. Let's start with our number one. And again, it's a Barrett-ass news day, so strap in. Number one, Rocksteady is apparently making a Suicide Squad game. This is Tom Phillips at Eurogamer. And don't worry, it doesn't stop there. It gets more juicy. A list of leaked domain names has set internet tongues wagging that Rocksteady, developer of Batman Arkham Asylum, is working on a game centered on DC Suicide Squad. The domain names popped up yesterday on Reset Era, where fans noted they were registered by a company connected to Warner Brothers. Eurogamer understands this to be accurate. I've heard that one particular phrase registered as a domain, Suicide Squad Kills the Justice League.com, is a contender for the game's final title, Suicide Squad Kills the Justice League, and a good summation of what you can expect Rocksteady's next big game to be about. Other domains registered include SuicideSquadGame.com and GothamKnightsGame.com. Gotham Knights refers to the unannounced Batman game currently in development at Batman Arkham Origins Studio, Warner Brothers Montreal. Both projects are set to be teased at Warner Brothers' upcoming DC fandom event in August. Your gamer understands. Now, Barrett Courtney, how does it feel to owe me a shot? Because I got that very right. The August release date.
You
or
predicted
not release
all
date.
This?
I predicted specifically the August announcement of whatever Warner Brothers Montreal is working on. Barrett, are you ashamed?
I think it's kind of bullshit that I don't know. I just think it's bullshit.
You just don't like it.
I just don't like it. I'm not a fan.
Did Barrett have a prediction?
Because here's the thing. We don't even know if it's actually going to come in August. Like, yeah, there's DC
the
fandom. Yeah. Hey, dude.
That's true. It's not a fact yet.
There have been other events.
I mean, it's not a fact yet, but like, it's happening.
There have been other events that have made way more sense for these games to be revealed, and they have not happened. So just because DC fandom is happening doesn't mean these announcements are legit happening at this event.
But
who the fuck knows?
Barrett, in their press release, they said WB game announcements in the press release for DC fandom.
And Jeff Keighley said there's going to be WB for his Summer Game Fest. And have we seen shit from WB yet? No, we haven't. So maybe we get shit this month from them. Who knows?
Willing to increase the bet?
Do we just what was the original bet? Was it a shot?
I think it was a shot. I think I get a shot from both you and Greg. And so I'm. Are you down to increase it to two shots from Barrett?
So wait, who's doing the shot?
Oh wait. Yes, I'm doing the shot. Greg and Barrett get me the shots, but also that doesn't make sense because I feel like you don't buy shots, and so I need some sort of loss factor from Barrett. What are you giving up here?
My firstborn child. I don't know.
Oh God, no.
It's probably not the first time he said that. I wouldn't trust this guy.
Fran, what's your take on all this?
You know, as much as I love the Rocksteady Batman games and all that, and I've been following and waiting to hear the announcement, I'm like, I've kind of lost hope, but also I'm a little confused now, and you could help me out. So we think this is what they're doing instead of like just another straight up Batman game. Is that where we're at with this?
From Rocksteady, yes. And that's always kind of been the conversation. I think Rocksteady after Arkham Knight, you know, it seemed that they wanted to lean back off of doing Batman games.
Right.
And it seemed that WB Montreal were the ones that were taking up the mantle of Batman.
Yeah, and that was the rumor a while back, which still also has not been confirmed.
Yeah, and that's not, like, that's been like
been teasing
the,
it, though.
That's been part of like kind of the rumor mill for a while, is that they were not doing anything Batman. They were doing something else. I know there was like a rumored Superman game at one point and stuff like that that they might have been working on. And then I have been hearing things about Suicide Squad, I think, for like the last couple of weeks. So this like doesn't super surprise me. It actually kind of excites me just in the aspect of like I was less excited at the idea of them working on a Superman game. And I know Greg is going to try to find me and kill me right now for saying that.
Mm-hmm.
But just because I don't know if there's really a way to make an interesting and good feeling Superman game. But the idea of making a video game that's centered around like very talented mercenaries who are out to kill very powerful superheroes like Superman and stuff, I think that's a really cool setup for possibly like a lot of interesting fights throughout that game. So that's the thing, is like, while yes, I will miss the Rocksteady era of Batman games, I totally respect like if they've wanted to move on from Batman for a while. And so I'm totally down to see what the Suicide Squad game is all about, honestly.
Yeah, here's what I think is the important question then, is so if Montreal, you know, Warner Bros. Montreal is working on, in the spirit of the Arkham games, probably taking that same type of gameplay to heart, right? Probably trying to just do their best job with that type of game. Then what type of game would that make this? You know, is it just going to be these characters, this story in the same type of gameplay? Because that doesn't add up for me. Wouldn't it need to be a bit, are they going to take, right, the Marvel route? Are they going to go do something crazy like that?
I mean, I think that is like the Marvel's Avengers route might actually be what this lines up with, because I believe there have been rumors in the past also pertaining to what Rocksteady is working on that it is. Actually, I think this was Jason Schreier that was actually talking about it.
I think
it, like,
I heard
last
something
year.
Like this a long time ago is why I asked.
Yeah, he was talking about it was like a co-op kind of game, or like a multiplayer game in some sense. And so it could be like Marvel's Avengers that's about to come out, but with Suicide Squad, which sounds like a very strange game coming from Rocksteady. I personally don't know how I feel about that. Like, I think Suicide Squad sounds cool, but a Rocksteady developed co-op Suicide Squad game doesn't necessarily sound like what I want from that studio.
Yep. Yeah, it was actually, I'll tell you, it's a long time ago now, and I might even be mixing some of this up, but I remember hearing about this kind of under the breath of, it wasn't even, this was like back when I was working at IGN, but this is a long time ago, but that it was supposed to be a bit Destiny-esque or whatever, and then like the Marvel stuff happened with Crystal Dynamics. I was like, wait, I thought that was Rocksteady that was doing this, and I got all confused, and then so now I'm wondering, like, is it whatever, is it still something in that vein? I mean, it was a very long time ago, and projects change and move around and all that stuff, but I'm excited. Rocksteady's a really good developer, so you know, whatever they do, I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, and reportedly,
what about this WB Montreal game though? What's going on here, Bless? What are your thoughts?
I mean, I don't really have. I want to ask you what your thoughts are, because Gotham Knights is what they're calling it, right? And that's of course coming off of the Court of Owls teases that Barrett has been gobbling up and has been anticipating. What does a Gotham Knights game do for you, Barrett?
I was talking a little bit about this yesterday while I was streaming, because I think the domain names went up yesterday. And it's one of those things where I don't think it – I like the name because it gets away from the Arkham kind of title convention that they've had for a while. And it has been said that WB Montreal is looking to make this kind of like a soft reboot of the Batman video game franchise. So I like that they're straying from the Arkham title. But it's also kind of weird because the last Batman Arkham game was Arkham Knight. So it's like a weird, like, okay, you got away from
Hear
Arkham.
Hear me out, though.
But
Hear
like,
me out, though.
What?
Gotham Knights, the sequel to Gotham Knights, Gotham City. The sequel to Gotham City, Gotham Asylum.
They just go in the exact opposite order. I also think it's interesting because the feeling I get from Gotham Knights is not particularly Batman, but more Bat Family, and I feel like that's something else that we have like heard like rumors on, and people have speculated over of like being able to play as the Bat Family. So it's a lot of interesting questions of like who will get to play, like who is going to be considered a Gotham Knight, right? Yeah, I don't know. There's still a lot of questions because, again, this is looking to be a soft reboot of the Batman video game franchise. And so I'm excited to see what WB Montreal has. Like I've said before, and very smart people like Roger Bacorny have said before, like the Arkham Origin story is one of the best stories in the Arkham universe. And like while the game and like the open world design wasn't completely there, like WB Montreal was still like doing some really interesting stuff in that game. So I'm really excited to see what they've got going on, especially story wise, because I think they told a really great story in Arkham Origins. So I trust them to do something cool. And of course, with the rumors of Scott Snyder helping them out with story, who's the creator of the Court of Owls and stuff, like that sounds really, really exciting.
We'll have to wait and see, probably at DC Fandom. I don't know why Barry doesn't believe it, but trust me, it's gonna happen.
Again,
DC
there have been Fandom, other events August, that have made more sense.
But Eurogamer understands, though. Eurogamer understands. They ended their article by saying, we understand this is happening.
Okay.
Eurogamer wouldn't steer us wrong.
Sure.
The European. Story Brandon. Number two. Speaking, go for it, Fran.
Sorry, no, I was just joking. I said, yeah, print that quote that you just said.
Speaking of Barrett news, story number two, we have SpongeBob SquarePants Battle for Bikini Bottom rehydrated reviews. We have a roundup for you. Jonathan Dornbush at IGN gave it a 5 out of 10 and says, SpongeBob SquarePants Battle for Bikini Bottom Rehydrated makes an argument that if you're going to remake something beloved, it's not worth taking any half measures. Rehydrated's visit of the iconic SpongeBob platformer often does just that. rather than addressing any of the real issues with Battle for Bikini Bottom that could have been tweaked without ruining the spirit of the original, it leaves history intact at the cost of making this a better game, and its problems have only become more noticeable with age and increased competition. There are bright spots that remain fun almost two decades later, and there are pops of ingenuity in its reworking, but it does little to stand alongside the best or even the pretty good platformer remakes and remasters we've seen this generation. Funke Joseph at GameSpot gave it a 2 out of 10 and says, if you find you still have fond feelings about the original SpongeBob SquarePants Battle for Bikini Bottom, you should watch a speedrun of it or find your old copy and dust off that PS2. This one isn't it. Remasters, ports, and remakes are nice because they make games feel more accessible to new audiences, and the ones that excel understand that some features from the game's era are antiquated and should be updated or removed. SpongeBob SquarePants Battle for Bikini Bottom Rehydrated flops like a fish out of water when it comes to this. Yeah. It's a game so focused on emulating and embellishing the original that it doesn't know the parts of itself that are fun and the parts that aren't. And then the last one I'm going to pull is from Mitch Vogel at Nintendo Life. They gave it a 7 out of 10, and they write, considering the long-reaching cultural impact that the SpongeBob cartoon has had on modern pop culture, it's nice to see that the franchise got at least one solid video game that properly represents the unique draw of SpongeBob and his friends. Though Battle for Bikini Bottom doesn't bring anything new to the table as a 3D platformer, its strong level design, lighthearted tone, and gorgeous remastered visuals make this one an easy recommendation. That being said, rampant technical issues hold the game back from true greatness, which is a real shame given the quality in nearly every other area. As a result, this certainly isn't the game to unseat Super Mario Odyssey, but those of you that love a good collectathon 3D platformer will find plenty to love here. Barrett, both me and you have been playing SpongeBob Battle for Bikini Bottom Rehydrated. Where are you at with it?
Blessing,
do you feel like these reviews are on
Blessing,
point?
Blessing, I actually want to hear your take first. I'm interested to hear what, because I don't know if you played the game when it was originally out, so I'm actually really interested to hear your take.
So I didn't play the game when it was originally out, and jumping into this game for the first time, my immediate impressions I got were, oh man, this is a PS2 game. And it's a PS2 game in the way that, despite them remastering it, it still feels, moves, and in a lot of ways even sounds like a PS2 game, which comes with mixed things, because for me, coming new into it and being someone who actually like really loved the PS2, like PS2 was the console at like my I guess coming of age with gaming, I guess is the way to put it. And so like playing it, you know, I feel like I didn't have a GameCube. No, I had a PS2. I had a next door neighbor.
I mean, it was on GameCube as well. Just feel
it was
like,
on GameCube as well.
You know, let's not forget. Anyway, sorry.
But yeah, like, you know, playing it, it's been one of those things where I'm like, all right, I can forgive so much here because I do understand the era that this game's from. I understand that maybe with this type of remake they're doing, they don't want to touch what's going on mechanically. They don't want to change too much. And I can respect that because as somebody who played the Shadow Colossus remake, that game kind of did a similar thing where they remastered all of the visuals. They tweaked things here and there. But ultimately, that Shadow Colossus remake remains untouched. And that comes for better and worse because for people like me that love that PS2 game, I like that. I didn't want them to touch Shadow Colossus. But I've talked to friends that were like, oh, man, this game kind of feels weird in the controls here and there. And it's one of those things where you're just going to have that disconnect. For me playing this game, you know, they leave it untouched in terms of what the game design is and all that stuff, which means that it feels dated as you're playing. But also, technically, there's just a lot there that feels wrong. Like, there are loading screens all over the place, and the loading screens are long. There are loading screens in places where it doesn't make sense. Like, I'll jump on the wrong, like, texture or something, and then I'll get a loading screen that will then load me back to, like, an appropriate spot on the map. And it's like, I don't know if that necessarily needed a loading screen. It would have been nice if they figured out a way technically to make it either an immediate respawn upon, like, jumping out of world or landing in a place that I'm not supposed to be in the game, or like, I don't know, find a way to make the game feel more free. And so that's the thing I've been noticing. But then also like just technically overall, it just doesn't. It seems like kind of a mess. I don't think it's a 2 out of 10, but I kind of align with the 5 out of 10 that Jonathan Dornbush gave it. Like I think that sounds about right. Like it's not a step forward in any way aside from the upgraded visuals, but you know, it's not, it's also not like offensively bad. Is that where you at, Barrett? Bad.
All right. So, of course, you can watch my first impressions up on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames right now, where I play through one of the early levels, Goo Lagoon, and kind of talk about my early takes. And I haven't actually played much. Like, I played like the first three levels. And like the first like major boss, and then I'm actually gonna restart my playthrough and play through the entire thing on stream this week. So my takeaways is like I don't disagree with what anybody is really saying. I think it's a little harsh with one of the reviews saying like this ain't it. Like dust off your old copy, because like for me this is the exact same game I remember for better and for worse. So it's like even if you dust off your original copy, like it's gonna be just as weird with like the things that you've been saying with like loading screens, which are ridiculously long for a game that I don't think should.
They're very long.
It's like egregious. And yeah, like there's a lot of like weird physics stuff that happens like when you're on like a kind of like a weird like seesaw type of bridge that like affect that will affect physics in a very very weird way. And it's just like and that's the unfortunate thing is like yeah, I remember having these same issues back when I was loving and playing these games back in 2003 2004 whatever. So like I'd probably like out of the three reviews that you'd read, you've read, I'd probably align with like Dornbush's score the most. The thing that still makes me like it though is because I played it originally. I have a bunch of nostalgia for it, so I do have like a lot of love for it still, even though I do see like all of the kind of threads coming apart while playing it. And to me, it still has like a certain amount of charm. I think like everything is beautifully animated. It's got a certain amount of life in there that as someone who's a fan of SpongeBob, I really fucking love it.
Yes, and it still has that SpongeBob charm to it. And I think that's the thing that kind of kept me coming back is hearing the characters talk. You know, hearing like the voice acting and being like, oh yeah, that's SpongeBob, except for Mr. Krabs, which is definitely not Mr. Krabs from the show.
Yeah, it's really, but it's weird because I don't remember if it was actually Mr. Krabs in the original game either. I haven't gone back to like watch like a video of the original game, but I should because yeah, that is definitely not Clancy Brown, and it's very off-putting.
Yeah, it was very off-putting because he was talking like Mr. Krabs, but I was like, that is not Mr. Krabs. But like even like a lot of the humor, a lot of the jokes, a lot of the stuff does or did land for me, and I'm actually compelled to play more. Like I've only played a few hours of it. Like I'm not that far into it. And I kind of want to play more because I like SpongeBob, but I will say that the technical issues are kind of holding me back. Like there's a bunch of stuff that I haven't even mentioned as far as like and. A lot of it is so minor is the crazy thing too, because like there's stuff like text, you know, when you're talking to a character you're having dialogue and they're talking, and it's one of those things where they'll have voiceover that covers like multiple text boxes, but like
the text box doesn't follow like their cadence of speaking. You have to press X every time like a certain amount of text is over for the text to continue, and that is something from the original game, and it's little things like that. It's like y'all didn't think to update this to a modern era setting in 2020.
Yeah, like there's part I was playing in Jellyfish Fields where I got late into the level, and I because of the way Jellyfish Fields is designed, right? Like it's a
also,
vertical.
Also, Fran,
level.
I see you're fresh in the fucking chat. Okay, speak up about SpongeBob if you want to fucking talk. All right,
I'm not. This is not on me. Fran. Andy came into chat because he realized like I didn't have much to add to this. To be fair, and I don't. You guys are the pros on this one. I do. I was laughing a little bit though and talking to chat because I legit was just remembering. I didn't tell them this, but I freaking previewed this game.
Did you really?
The original, and I remember talking to like you know the president of Heavy Iron or whatever it was at the time at like I think a THQ preview event, and I love SpongeBob, but yeah. Anyway, it's the only short thing I have to add is it's too bad it's getting some negative reviews. I did. I was super excited when they brought out you know obviously a SpongeBob game of this caliber, let's say at the time, and. If they botched it up, that's too bad. But I haven't touched it, so I really wouldn't know.
The last,
yeah, like,
sorry, go
it
ahead.
Doesn't look like a two. I was watching footage.
Yeah, it looks good, like and it like it has that charm But I think past that, it kind of, like, for me as somebody who loves collectathon 3D platformers, I think it loses so much in terms of the way it's designed. Because what I was going to say is, like, I got to the top of Jellyfish Fields and I fell. And it was one of those things where it didn't, like, game over me or anything. I just landed back toward the beginning of the level, which means that, like, oh, snap, I have to do this long-ass level again. And it was one of those things where it's, like, that's very archaic when it comes to level design in that way.
I guess I can understand that front, where if it's literally, like, rehydrated 2003 game, you know, that stuff just doesn't hold up. It literally is 17 years ago. And back then, a lot of it was about the quality of the graphics and what you could do at that time. And, like, it wasn't as nearly as much as what we're doing today. So, anyway, might be best for kids, not adults.
My last thought is that if you know me and my love for admittedly trash collectathons that go over the top with collectathons like Donkey Kong 64, which is definitely a way better game than this. But if you need that itch, if you need that itch, like, scratched, I think this is a good enough game that you can play through a weekend and just never think about it again.
I can see that.
Want to do that, though? Are you recommending that people do that? Just because it's SpongeBob? Is that what I'm hearing?
If you got that itch.
Yeah.
I think if you got that itch.
If you have that itch and if you like SpongeBob, I'd say it's still worth checking out.
Yeah. Story, I'm just saying the way you said it. Oh, well, it's fine.
Story number three, Nintendo is slowing down on mobile games. This is Andy Robinson at VGC who writes, Nintendo President Shuntaro Furukawa is said to have told Japanese media last month that the company was, quote, not necessarily looking to continue releasing many new applications for the mobile market, end quote. According to Bloomberg, Nintendo is disappointed by the revenues it's achieved so far from titles such as Mario Kart Tour and Fire Emblem Heroes. In addition, the company is said to be unsatisfied by the limitations of the mobile platform from a game design perspective. Quote, the company believes its franchises shine brightest when coupled with designed by Nintendo controllers, and it's never been fully comfortable with the touchscreen-only interface of a phone, Bloomberg reports. Bloomberg claims Nintendo has asked its mobile development partners not to force players to spend a lot in games, fearing it could harm its games' brands. So far, over half of Nintendo's mobile revenue has reportedly come from Fire Emblem, with the title's gacha monetization model proving fruitful, according to Sensor Tower data, with an average revenue per download of $41. The next two highest grossing Nintendo titles as of January 2020 are Animal Crossing Pocket Camp, which accounted for 12% of all user spending, followed by Dragalia Lost at 11%. Nintendo's Mario titles have seen huge download numbers, but have fared worse in terms of mobile spend, according to Sensor Tower, with Mario Kart Tour and Super Mario Run contributing overall revenue shares of 8 and 7%, and Dr. Mario World with less than 1%. So far, over half of Nintendo's mobile revenue has reportedly come from Fire Emblem, with the title's gacha monetization model proving fruitful, according to Sensor Tower data, with an average revenue per download of $41. This article repeats itself. And so, Fran, were the Nintendo mobile titles ever, like, your thing? Did those ever, like, appeal to you?
No, but what I will say is, I mean, first of all, I think we need to hear a little bit more on Nintendo's, like, official plans, because I have seen them in the past. You'd hear things like this, and so, meaning the story suddenly becomes Nintendo's getting out of the mobile market, right? And then that'll be the story, but I don't think we're hearing that necessarily. That being said, this also doesn't surprise me, is that Nintendo has been pretty, I'd say, fearful, I feel like, of the mobile market. The biggest thing that I've seen is, like, they have these monster franchises. With someone of their resources, it should not be hard for them to make money at all on the mobile games market. But obviously, the way that people do that, they're not totally comfortable with. And I almost feel like they haven't, like, researched it enough either, though. You know, I know that comes off wrong. Like, they make the games. They obviously have a lot of people researching this. But meaning, I think they're a little fearful of how mobile games are done. They even, you know, point out the control limitation stuff here. But it may not be their bag. But what I will say is, in the long run, it would surprise me if they didn't definitely dive back into the mobile market because it's monstrous. And just because, like, if this truly is because Animal Crossing is like a huge hit, like, okay, that's very circumstantial. You know, you've got your next 10 years to worry about. So I'd be surprised if we don't see Nintendo to continue to prod at the mobile market. They just need to get over this hump of how are they going to make money, you know, because premium games are, right, more how they make money. Animal Crossing is a premium $60 game, right?
And I think that's exactly where the conflict is with Nintendo. Like, reading through the story and seeing how Nintendo operates as a company and seeing how they've operated in this mobile space, they very much strike me as, like, the old school classic rapper who, like, refuses to use autotune because they even though they know the autotune is going to make their music sell better, they don't want to, like, compromise their integrity. Nintendo kind of strikes me as that. Right, where, you know, they have that interest in mobile. They know for a fact that Nintendo as a brand is powerful. They know that Mario's a hit, Pokemon's a hit, all their franchises, or maybe not all, but so many of their franchises are hits. And
they can print,
you know,
money on there. They can
print money on there if they really wanted to. And I think for Nintendo, this has just been a huge experiment. Like, this has just been a huge, mm-hmm. like, all right, let's see what happens. Like, let's see how this works, because, like, one, we don't have a reason not to, and then also, like, if this works, we're going to have a huge new revenue stream on our hands. We're going to have a huge new audience to make games for. And so I think the thing about Nintendo is that, you know, you look at how they treat their brands, you look at how they treat their games, you look at how they really like that premium thing, right? Like, you look at Switch titles and they really like not lowering the prices of their games, mm-hmm. because they don't want you to devalue the games, right? They want their games to hold that same value. I think that translates well to how that translates to how they've handled the mobile market. But I also think that translates to why they're not seeing as much success overall in the mobile market, aside from Fire Emblem, which they've adopted the gacha model with.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you said it best, like, they are testing and it very much feels that way. Actually, on the other side of it, we'll say I have to give them some respect for being very careful with how you develop mobile games. They clearly, I think, under their breath have made it clear they think that, you know, games are worth a certain cost. You're pretty much getting at it. And I think they're very nervous to release, like, full-on mobile games that you can play with full controls for, you know, $5.99 or whatever it's going to be, when they go out there on Switch and they have to release that for 20 or 30 or 40 or whatever they put it at. So I think, they're experimenting to see how they can kind of cross both those philosophies and take it step by step. But I have to give them some credit for that, which is they have actually the money and the backing to do it. They're not, like, in trouble or anything. And if they find whatever their path is, you know, they will find it eventually. I would love to see, you know, more Nintendo mobile games. Like, just like, I always bring up Pokemon Puzzle League. It's one of my favorite games of all time.
Oh,
like,
God.
Just anything like that. Yeah, like, give me something like that. I don't even play a ton of mobile games, but when I do play mobile games, I personally play stuff like that. And I feel like, they have a treasure trove of stuff they could do, but they're being very cautious. I played Fire Emblem, actually. I really liked it. That was a good choice. So I don't know. I want to see them do more stuff like that. I hope this doesn't mean that they're going to spend the next 2 years, you know, relishing their profits while the next gen consoles come out, and then they realize that everybody's complaining because Switch isn't power enough, and we go right back to the usual game that we play with Nintendo is, why doesn't the next Breath of the Wild run well enough, and where's the mobile games? And then we wait 2 years and it'll be 3 years from now that it starts coming back around. And anyway, I hope that's not the case.
I personally would be surprised if they continue to go big on mobile for the time being, right? Like, I can see them taking a break and maybe returning in like 5 to 10 years, but I feel like right now with how they've operated so far and what they're seeing on return, I don't think they like I'm sure they like the Fire Emblem gacha model from the sense that it is very profitable for them and that is their most successful game on mobile, but I think they don't want to treat Mario that way, and they don't want to treat Zelda that way, or Pokemon. Or maybe Pokemon, but in terms of their beloved, cherished franchises that they hold close to the chest, right? Like, I can't see Nintendo caving to trying to, you know, super monetize it in a way that's not a pun. Super monetize it in a way that might jeopardize how people feel about Mario.
Yeah, it's also just going to be very stock driven, right? You know, they're going to have the conversation as soon as the stocks start going down again, because that's what investors want to hear. But investors don't care right now because Animal Crossing and the amount it sold is just insane. But it was, some of that was circumstantial to, you know, the it just blew up because of what's going on in the world. Not that Animal Crossing isn't great, but, you know, I don't think that Animal Crossing would have blown up like it did if we didn't have, you know, famous movie stars and everybody just trapped inside.
Everybody,
you know, when it happened. And it was the perfect game and it hit the perfect time. Nintendo's actually great at that, right place, right time, like with the Wii as well. But yeah, anyway, I do think it'll be sooner than later. Like, let's say they are backing off for now. As soon as their stock starts to come down again, they're going to have to tell investors, wait, we don't know, we're working on mobile and here's why. So here's mark whatever that Future Games Daily is, Barrett or Blessing, if you're around and I'm not, tell them that I said it was coming, whenever that's going to be.
Why wouldn't you be around, Fran, what are you not telling
us? I'm not here every day is all worried, I'm saying.
Fran, what do you have to tell us?
Jeez, this is not like Fran, dark and grim, man.
Are you good, bro?
I just meant I'm not here every day. Anyway. Yep.
Story number four. A former Microsoft employee accuses Mixer manager of racist comments. This is Matthew Handrahan at gamesindustry.biz. A former Microsoft employee left the company following its alleged failure to address racism within the management of its Mixer streaming service. Milan Lee, who worked at Microsoft for 2 years starting in 2017, described his experience on the Mixer team as, quote, the worst I've ever had professionally, and it's all due to racism, end quote. In a Twitter blog post, Lee said he was initially beyond happy to move to Seattle and join the Mixer team due to a longstanding desire to work in the games industry. However, he was one of the few black people on the team and suspected that he was, quote, only hired to meet a diversity goal because I was black, end quote. The main example Lee cited was a meeting in which his manager used slavery as an analogy to explain Mixer's relationship with his partners. In a subsequent meeting, Lee voiced his objection to the analogy to his manager, but his complaint was allegedly disregarded and he was told to work to, quote, work on himself, end quote. Quote, if I wanted to go far in this industry, I need to work on my emotions. I need to work on my emotions and feelings to similar comments, Lee recalled. After this meeting, I knew I was leaving, end quote. Lee has also alleged that his skip-level manager didn't report the complaint to human resources, and he resigned shortly after. A subsequent investigation by the Microsoft HR team found the manager to be not guilty of the charge. Lee added, quote, the reason my manager was not penalized and the reason she still has her job today is because she cannot be racist. The reason she cannot be racist is because she hired a black person, end quote. Mixer responded to Lee on Twitter with the following statement. Our goal is to build a positive, welcoming, and inclusive team and community. To those sharing your stories, it's unacceptable that we did not provide that for you. We'll be vigilant in addressing this more diligently in the future. Phil Spencer, who oversees Microsoft's gaming activities, including Mixer, reached out to Lee on Twitter to ask if he would agree to a meeting. Quote, racism will not be tolerated on our teams or on our services, end quote, Spencer said. Lee has now confirmed that he will meet with Spencer today to discuss his experience in more detail. And let me tell you, I went and I actually read what Milan Lee posted on Twitter, because this is a thing that
Blew
up over the weekend. This is the thing that was making the rounds. And his actual report that he wrote out, I think is way more even damning than what they say in the gamesindustry.biz article. Like, he goes into actual details of like, no, yeah, like this is what.
Yeah,
they
the
said,
steps
right?
that he took, and yeah, all
yeah,
of that.
Like there's the steps that I took. This is the exact quote from my manager, which was not a good quote at all. Let me tell you, it's not the kind of thing you want to hear as an employee, at Mixer. And then he also talked about how he says here. Actually, I'm looking at it right now. He says, while at a conference, I was pulled aside and told that the only reason I was hired is because I'm street smart. And he continues to say, the first thing that popped into my head at the time was affirmative action. I believed I was only hired to meet a diversity goal because I was black. Anyway, I decided to brush it off and let it go. And then he continues to talk about how, after that, you know, that's when those meetings happened. That's when he started to experience more and more stuff. And it's all disheartening to see. Like, it's all pretty shitty from the side of management there. Right, like the fact that he took the right steps, the fact that those right steps weren't enough. And the fact that, like, all in all, right, as a black employee, he came to his manager, confronted his manager about a thing that, from what I'm reading here, from the exact words the manager said here, I would agree like is not a great thing to say, right? Is a shitty thing to say, right? Confronts it and then is hit back with from his manager and from people higher ups on the team, right? Saying that actually no, like this is okay. Like we Googled this. It seems like this is an okay thing to say. I don't know. It's unfortunate and it's actually very frustrating to see.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's like I can't believe this year, period. So this was actually very believable. Of course I read it, and of course this happened, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like reading that quote, it still blows my mind. Why would you ever equate anything you're doing to that? Like, I control them. I'm their slave master. I own them. What the F? So for starters, you said that, but then this other stuff with, I don't know who said the Street Mart thing, if it was the manager or not, but just not a good environment. It seems like Lee Wright handled it really professionally.
Handled it the best way they could.
Yeah. It was super like even-handed about it. Said, all right, I talked to him. I wanted to get clarity. Didn't even need clarity for starters. And then tries to go to the skip level manager, right? And the fact
and
that it never made
know,
it.
Right? Like skip level manager would be the manager that is above your manager.
Yeah. Yeah, go to somebody else. I mean, the fact that it never made it to HR is crazy as well. Like telling obviously multiple people, like even if you as manager, you know, I've managed a lot of people in the past, you may know. And it's like, even if you as manager might feel a certain way, you should report this type of stuff immediately. It should have this, like any, it's so obvious.
Or
like
you
issue
should respond
at hand,
you should respond with some type of apology, like at first, right? Like, to give you even more context. In Milan's blog here, right, that he wrote, he mentions here, and this is the exact quote: "Time goes by, and we're in an internal meeting discussing projects we wanted to execute. My manager decided to give us an analogy. That analogy was, quote, 'I'm in between a rock and a hard place. What I mean is all the partners are my slaves. I own their content. I control the success on our platform. For me, I am a slave master. I am the slave master. I own my partners.'" End quote. That's the manager's quote. And then Milan here continues to talk about how he immediately got angry. And honestly, like at that point, didn't really want to work for Microsoft and Mixer anymore. And then from then, like confronted the manager, you know, went to the skip level manager, you know, tried to make things right, tried to express his feelings, and like got essentially shunned and shut down. Which again, disheartening to see. It's fucked up.
It's crazy. Glad that it's coming to light. I mean, a lot of stuff's coming to light, and you know, great that Phil reached out. And you know, obviously, that's always a tough spot when somebody in your company is being racist or worse or whatever it is, and like it's not what the whole company stands for. I would hope, right? And so, how do you course correct that? How do you make good on it? They have a lot of work to do, but good that Phil is at least getting on top of it. And then, you know, I didn't see it in your write up here, but something that's happening as well now is the, you know, community, right, power and standing up for these types of injustices and stuff, right, is happening everywhere. And so you have all these people on Mixer that are like, I'm not streaming anymore, I'm leaving if you guys don't correct this in some way. And so that's also actually going on right now. I saw a number of folks on Mixer saying they're not going to stream, they're not going to support them, they might even leave if they don't hear, you know, a better resolve to this than just, oh, she can't be racist, she hired somebody that's black. Like, what?
Yeah.
So but you need to go further than that, right?
Like you said, like shout out to Phil Spencer. And I think that's the thing to highlight, right? I think it goes beyond like the original quote, because you know people say insensitive shit. People sometimes say ignorant shit and like just don't realize it, right? Even this quote that I read, that would seem like, all right, that's definitely something you shouldn't say. It happens. What really matters is like how you follow that up. And you don't follow that up by like, you know, telling your black employee that the racist thing you just said wasn't racist because of whatever reason, right? Like the way in which you handle these situations, especially as higher ups at a company, like that changes so much. And I think that's where the conversation lies in terms of all these different things we see in terms of culture and video game companies, right? Like it's been an ongoing conversation about crunch. It's been an ongoing conversation about, you know, like when we look at Riot and the stuff that went down there as far as you know, that culture being like very masculine and making a lot of their women employees not feel welcome, right? Like a lot of it comes down to, all right, how do we as management listen to what's going on? How do we as management provide a culture that is healthy for everybody? And how do we respond when things go wrong? And I think that response is make or break for you. Like, if you don't respond, especially when these things are brought to light, especially when people are taking the correct steps, and especially when people are trying to take things to HR, whose job it is to, like, make sure that this shit is dealt with. If that's not done in a way that is helpful for your employees, then you result in having bad culture and toxic workplaces. And, you know, that's the thing that is causing so much difficulty and struggle for so many people working in the industry, you know, across crunch, you know, with racism, with sexism, and all this different stuff. And so, again, like, shout out to Phil Spencer for actually responding and meeting with Lee one-on-one to actually talk.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Well said. Exactly. You know, like, how you respond to it. Like, this person didn't have to go on the defense. They could have said, you know what, you're out there, you're right, I don't know what I was thinking, and apologize. Mm-hmm. And then say, you know what, we also, yeah, let's go talk to HR. Let's figure this out. I don't want this kind of culture around here. And, you know, how you respond to it, like, that's exactly it. People make mistakes. And to hear you say that, that's exactly it. We have this culture problem as well of, like, there are ignorant people out there and they don't know they're being ignorant. I think you just said that, right? And it's like, people need this ability and this cognizance to say, hold up, maybe I am, maybe you're right, give me a second, apologize, and we, like, can move on. This. That doesn't mean that you have to get thrown into the fire and there's no recourse. There can be recourse, but it does take not being defensive and so on. So I think that was very well said.
Fran, we have two more stories left, and they're quick ones because these are things that we've kind of already touched on in content today. But story number five is our quick hits. Crash Bandicoot 4, It's About Time, has been officially announced. This is Gabe Gerwin at GameSpot. In the works at Toys for Bob, which also handled Spyro Reignited Trilogy, Crash Bandicoot 4, It's About Time, uses the same basic platforming gameplay of the original titles, but with advanced and modern twists such as wall running and grinding rails to make it through tougher areas. The art style has been overhauled for the latest systems, and you'll be able to play as Neo Cortex alongside Crash and Coco. Set at the very end of Crash Bandicoot Warped, the new game sees Neo Cortex, Dr. Entropy, and Uka Uka finally escape from their remote plant and return for another attempt at multiverse domination. Of course, you stand in their way, and you'll have access to four special quantum masks to, quote, bend the rules of reality, end quote, itself, and make it through the difficult areas. These include the time mask, which slows down time, and the gravity mask, which lets you platform upside down. Crash Bandicoot 4, It's About Time, has a release date of October 2nd, 2020, and it'll release on PS4, Xbox One. Unlike Insane Trilogy, it hasn't been announced for PC or Switch.
Boo.
Exciting stuff. Bring and yeah, boo, Switch, I do want to see it come to Switch. Especially because Insane Trilogy was on Switch. And then
I was going to say, what was the quick reactions from? Were you on that reaction show, or was it just
I wasn't. It was Tim Barrett and Jonathan Dornbush. And I watched it, and it seems like everybody's very happy about it. Isn't that right,
Barrett? You're excited, Barrett?
It looks dope as hell. I'm so excited for it. Check out that reacts to really get some expert perspective, especially from our good old boy Jonathan Dornbush, who had a lot of great insight on not just Crash and what this new entry could all be about, but also just like Toys for Bob in general as developers and all this stuff. It's a really cool insight that he brings to the video. So definitely check it out.
Cool.
And then lastly, story number six, Min Min is coming to Smash Ultimate. This is Steve Watts at GameSpot. Nintendo held a Smash Brothers Ultimate presentation all about its next DLC character, Min Min, from the wacky boxing-like game ARMS. A debut trailer showed the various ARMS characters knocking each other out over a chance to grab the Smash Brothers invite, only to have Min Min step in and grab it for herself. She's coming on June 29th for $5.99 or as part of the second Fighter's Pass. Also coming on June 29th will be a new set of Mii Fighter costumes. Those include Ninjara from ARMS, Heihachi from Tekken, Marie and Callie from Splatoon, and Vault Boy from Fallout. And Vault Boy looks amazing. Those will be available for 75 cents each. A new Spirits feature will let you replay past matches for a high score, and it'll keep a cumulative total of all your high scores. Going into one of those with lower equipment will give you a better score. Sakurai also showed amiibo figures for Persona's Joker and Dragon Quest's Luminary Hero, both coming this fall. Fran, does that do anything for you? Smash news?
It does. I mean, it's funny. I love Smash. I haven't been able to keep up with it, shamefully, but I was never even an arms fan, but I actually think the character looks really cool. I mean, any character with ramen noodle arms, you know, I'm down for it. But so excited to see, man, that Smash has just got so much success and happy about that. But I was also going to point out, yeah, I saw the Vault Boy Mii Fighter costume thing, and I think Tim had enlightened me on this or someone, but like usually when a character comes to the Mii Fighter costumes, it probably means we won't see them as like a character,
like
playable,
a character,
right?
Yeah.
So I was kind of bummed in a way. I was like, oh, Vault Boy would be fun.
Yeah.
But
that was my immediate reaction too, right? When right? I saw Vault Boy, I was like, oh snap, that's really cool. I never thought about that. And then I sat and I was like, shoot, man, could have been cool to get Vault Boy as an actual character. But you know, I'll take what I can get. Either way, Vault Boy still looks
version.
Amazing.
Yep.
Yeah. Fran, I'm about to ask you where I can find games coming out to the Mom and Grop shops today. But before I get there, let me tell you about our sponsor. This episode of Kind of Funny Games Daily is brought to you by Purple Mattress. Technology has improved just about everything. Phones, cars, shopping, yet mattresses have more or less been the same since the invention of sleep. But we deserve better. And finally, the mattress has evolved thanks to Purple. The secret to Purple is the Purple Grid. It's a patented comfort technology that instantly adapts to your body's natural shape and sleep style. Purple is for every body, no matter how you sleep. Purple is designed with over 2,800 open air channels and naturally temperature neutral gel. You'll never sleep too hot or too cold. The Purple mattress is soft where you want it, firm where you need it, and comfortably cool all over. It's truly a mattress that does it all. Kind of Funny loves Purple Mattress. Tim uses Purple products and says they're amazing. His Purple pillow never gets warm, and it's super sturdy. You can count on resting easy night after night, year after year, because the ultra-durable Purple Grid won't sink or lose shape. Purple is so confident in what they do that every Purple mattress comes with free shipping and returns and a risk-free 100-night trial. Experience the next step of sleep. Go to purple.com/games and use promo code GAMES for a limited time. You'll get $150 off any Purple mattress order of $1,500 or more. Again, that's purple.com/games and use the promo code GAMES for $150 off any mattress order over $1,500 or more. Terms apply. Fran, I'm really excited to see who the next Smash Brothers Ultimate DLC character is, but that reveal is just so far away. If I want to know what's coming to Mom and Grop shops today, where'd I look?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kind of Funny Games Daily show host each and every weekday.
Out today, we got Azure Striker Gunvolt 2 for PC, Coaster for PS4, Sword and Sandals Spartacus for Switch, Geese versus Cthulhu, or Geese versus Cthulhu for PC, Low Poly Forces for PC, Alien Cat 3 for PC, Your Game, The Game of Ancient Gods for PC, Card Blitz WWII, that might be Card Blitz World War II, but I'm not sure. But Card Blitz WWII for PC, Hylix 2 for PC and Mac, Secret Government for PC and Mac, Run Grandpa Run for PC, and then Armory and Machine 2 is out now, free on iOS and Android. It's a story-based incremental game where you build up the world's strongest AI. It's like Final Fantasy or GTA, where you don't have to play earlier games to get this one. And then new dates, photo mode is coming summer 2020 to My Hero 1's Justice 2. This is a strange thing to include in new dates. I think this is Greg's doing. But yeah, there you go. If you're looking forward to photo mode in My Hero 1's Justice 2, there you go. Summer 2020.
Man, and that's finally going to bring me back to that game after playing it for a solid hour and just never touching it again. That'll be the thing that brings me back.
Oh, and then here's an exciting one. Solitaire 3D is coming to Steam on July 1st.
Dang.
Yeah, man.
I didn't even know Solitaire was in 3D.
Play Solitaire in three dimensions on your PC. Boom. There you go.
Why not just play it in three dimensions in real life and get a fucking pack of cards.
Exactly. That's
anytime anybody's even floated the idea of playing Solitaire with actual physical cards, I've worried about them. I'm like, we're not doing this. That's not a thing people actually do. You play Solitaire on a PC like an adult or a child, in my case, I guess, when I was a kid. Now it's time for you to mail. Of course, you can write into patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. Where you can get the show ad-free. Are we looking at gameplay, or are you looking
at gameplay? I looked at Solitaire 3D. I was like, it doesn't even look that 3D. It's still, like, on a table.
Can you look up
Solitaire
3D?
I don't know how you do. It's literally flat cards on a flat table. How do you make a game like that more? Like, do you need it in 3D? Yeah.
I've never requested Solitaire in 3D. And also, let me say that Solitaire is a game in 51 Worldwide Classics, even though it's Spider Solitaire. I don't know if they have regular Solitaire. But even still, Spider Solitaire, better than regular Solitaire. First of all, that's my hot take. I'll give it. Spider Solitaire was like, I'm not sure what version of Windows it was, but like, that's when you knew you had like the good version of Windows, when it had Spider Solitaire in it and like all the other like random games. Yes.
You're going to show him I'm telling you, it's kind of underwhelming. I also looked up Run Grandpa Run. That was more interesting. See, so they put it on a real table, I guess, right? It's not that 3D, right?
Just play Solitaire on your PC.
Right, I thought it was going to be like somebody like dealing and like 3D hands and yeah, I don't know. Just nice.
Over 100.
I mean, I'm not hating on it.
What? Wait, in Solitaire 3D, there are over 100 games? Is that what you're saying?
It says right there, over 100 games of what?
I can't see. Your screen is very small on my screen.
It's very tiny.
I'm sorry, I can't full screen it. If I full screen it, it gets all fucked up. Sorry.
It does say 100 different
games. I don't have the fancy full setup like Kevin does, but.
And I want you to know, it has Spider Premier, Pyramid, and Klondike, etc. Multiple card decks, a wide range of backgrounds.
Well, that's actually kind of cool.
If you like Solitaire as much as Blessing, you might be interested.
Well, that's way more than Solitaire, though. That's actually like a really cool thing. That's a huge collection of card games. I might be into that.
It does, I want to warn you, take up 120 megabytes is required.
Oh, man.
So you're going to need 120 megabytes.
120 whole megabytes.
That's what it
like,
says.
Damn, son. That's almost the size of Last of Us Part 2.
You might want to pop that on your solid state drive.
Again, patreon.com/kindoffunnygames is where you can go to get the show ad-free and write in questions for reader mail, just like Julian, the gluten-free gamer. Julian writes in and says, with the delay of Cyberpunk 2077 to November 19th, we now have Cyberpunk in the Jedi Fallen Order release date, taking it out of contention for the Game Awards event. Do you think Jeff Keighley should make an exception or change these guidelines? Understood it is based on time for reviewers, but perhaps CD Projekt Red gives out review copies early. Could this still make the cut? Fran, this is a huge discussion last year with Jedi Fallen Order, how that game pretty much landed on the cutoff. For Game Awards and in those nominations. Cyberpunk 2077, one of the biggest games of the year, is going to be likely a critical darling.
Yeah.
I can't say for sure, but if I had to guess, like that's going to be one of the biggest games of the year, especially in terms of awards and all that stuff.
Yeah.
What's your take on it coming out late November and how that bumps up with Game Awards?
Yeah, I mean, number one, I don't think they've announced right what they're going to do for 2020 in the rules, so we don't know if they've figured out and responded to feedback, but because of the way that it works, it's like a bunch of different outlets and chosen voters. There's a lot of moving parts. You do inevitably have to get a cutoff date. So I kind of understand how that works. I think you hit the nail on the head, which is like, I think their thing actually said when it's publicly available for consumption. And I kind of understand some of the nuances there, but like if they can just put it into many of these critics' hands, then, you know, I don't think it should matter. You know, they just need to get it to them. Like, I mean, it's going to need to be like a month before the date probably. So,
yeah,
I don't know. What's your take? I do think that, I'll wait till you go and then I have something to say about.
I think Jeff Keighley and the Game Awards have to like kind of keep their ear to the ground with this one, because I know it was reported earlier that reviewers were going to get this game weeks early, like weeks in advance. And so like in terms of when reviewers are going to get the game, you know, I think there will be time there to play and digest it. But with Cyberpunk being as big of a game it is, like who knows how much time it's going to take for people to play through that game and be able to like, you know, sit with it and like have their thoughts and be able to like talk about it in a game of the year kind of sense by then. And so like, I kind of think it's difficult because you don't want to give a game special treatment because it's Cyberpunk, but I do think it's on them to make sure Cyberpunk is able to get into the conversation, because that is a game that is going that will very likely be a part of those conversations in terms what people look at as game of the year or best RPG and in all these different things. Like that's a highly anticipated game. And they're kind of in between a rock and a hard place, I imagine. I assume though that like it being delayed this early gives them room to talk and figure out how they're going to approach the situation. And so I don't have worries too much that they're not going to figure it out.
What was the date last year? Was it like the 12th or something like that? Or
yeah, it was like the 14th.
A week before. But like, meaning given the thing, again, they haven't, I don't think, announced what that cutoff date is. They actually now know when this comes out. They could very easily, within a week or two, I'm sure, manage to hold some of the votes. But it's all production, man, and it gets complicated. I wanted to say, I think it's a tricky situation because, yeah, you look at last year and like Fallen Order should have been a big part of that conversation. It was an amazing accomplishment, a new Star Wars game, Respawn, Shining, and it wasn't part of it. It's unfortunate because people don't care about Game Awards as much in the following year. And that's kind of my hot take. Like, I totally support and understand why you want the hype in December. It's very, very hard to do that objectively and get everybody to play all those games. Play Sekiro, play Fallen Order. You got this. So much comes out in such a short span of time that, just to be honest, I actually don't think Game Awards are not the Game Awards. The idea of Game Awards being in, like, December, it's for the audience wanting to consume that award as soon as possible. In a way, it kind of ruins and takes away from the, in my personal opinion, objectivity. What you want to do is get a panel of people that give them all the time, be like, you have to play Sekiro. I don't care if it's your type of game, but it's up for the running. I need you to play it. And then, you know, unfortunately though, then we wouldn't get awards till like, you know, March 1st and nobody cares. So it's a tough situation to be in, but I do think it's a darn shame that you see what happens with Fallen Order. Is Fallen Order going to come up this year then? Is it going to be taken super seriously and get its time in the limelight when you got a new next-gen console coming out or multiple next-gen consoles? So I don't know. It's in other words, I feel like the whole thing needs some thinking still. Awards are super hard to do.
In a situation where Cyberpunk somehow doesn't get included in this year's Game Awards and it then... somehow folds in with next year's, I think that becomes a very interesting conversation on what happens, especially if people look at Cyberpunk with the same reference as Witcher 3, right? Like Witcher 3 was a game that got a ton of Game of the Year awards.
Yeah.
If Cyberpunk is still, you know, if we look at 2021 and Cyberpunk is still on top in that sort of way, like, does Cyberpunk become Game of the Year 2021 from the Game Awards? And, like, does that become a weird thing for everybody where everybody's like, all right, yeah, but that's kind of weak, right? This game came out last year. How is it Game of the Year 2021? It's such a weird thing.
Exactly, because the next-gen version is going to come out, and people might wait to play it on, you know, Series
X. I mean, that's
X
true, too.
But normally in those situations, it's just considered a release. It's not considered for an overall, right? It wouldn't be considered in 2021 because of that. So it's tricky. Yeah. It's not as easy as it sounds, but I do simply put agree with you. I really hope they just make room for it. And given their credibility and how good that team is at CD Projekt, like, they're going to need to make room for it.
Aiden Dean writes in to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames and says, good morning, Blessing and Fran. This weekend, I decided it would be a good idea to play 48 races in a row on Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, which is every single track. It took way longer than I thought it would, and I can't say I recommend it to anyone. But that's not really what this question is about. While doing this, I had a thought. What if Nintendo is working on Mario Kart Ultimate and is going to release a Mario Kart game with every track ever in a Mario Kart game remastered for the Switch? Don't you guys think that would be awesome? What do you think are the chances of that ever happening? Thanks for all you guys do and keeping me entertained at work. Fran, you're the Mario Kart expert here. What are your thoughts on Mario Kart Ultimate?
I don't know if I'm an expert anymore. First of all, this person might have spent anywhere from 8 to 15 hours doing this is what I'm thinking of it. I don't know. That's a lot of time to be playing Mario Kart. Actually, wait, if it was straight in a row. Anyway, do I think that's they're making like an ultimate with everything? I think it's possible. I think Mario Kart 8 Deluxe is like the Mario Kart to play and to own because it is so awesome to play your favorite tracks. It was so well done. So actually, I don't know. It's the first time I thought about it. The reason I'm hesitating is because there's a reason why all the levels didn't make it into Deluxe. You know, I don't know that every level deserves to be in there if that's the idea, but I could see one maybe with more. And my last thing I'd say about it is like, we do need a bunch of awesome new tracks. Like Deluxe was cool, but I think we need to take Mario Kart into the next stage, if you will. And it's going to need a lot of new levels and stuff for us to love. So
if a game like
that's
that
not
were,
enough.
If a game like that were to come out, Fran, what do you think you would score it?
Barrett, I know what you're trying to do. I would never, ever think about scoring a game unless I've actually played it for a significant amount of time. But yes, probably a 7.9. I'm tired
now
enough
it's time.
To say it.
Now Fran is like, fuck it, I'm gonna tell you guys the truth.
You're right. Everybody wants to hear me say 7.9.
7.9.
I'm broke down.
Fuck it.
Yeah.
Now it's time for kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong, where you let us know what we got wrong as we got it wrong. Nanobiologist writes in and says, breaking news, Ghost of Tsushima has gone gold. It was announced on Sucker Punch's Twitter. So congratulations, Ghost of Tsushima. It's gone gold. Nanobiologist also says, the Rocksteady rumor regarding Suicide Squad started from a marketing leak. This was reported April 17th, 2019. Nanobiologist also says Clancy Brown was not in the original Battle for Bikini Bottom. Ignacio Rojas says, according to IMDb, the same actor voices Mr. Krabs on both Battle for Bikini Bottom games. Nanobiologist says Fran said that the Mii Fighter outfits mean they won't become characters, but that's not true. Inklings and Pink Pei Rule were Mii Fighter costumes in Smash Brothers 3DS and Wii U, and they're now fighters. Nanobiologist, you're wrong. Mii Fighters don't become fighters in the same game, is what we're
That's
saying.
Exactly it. Thank you. That's what I was saying. Yes. That's what Tim enlightened me on. When it's in the same game, it hasn't happened yet, and it's very unlikely. So.
Yes. Kebab says, nice you, can already play 3D modeled Solitaire in 51 Worldwide Classics on Switch, which I was actually going to say. I thought I said that, but maybe I didn't finish my sentence. And Bob also says Solitaire with physical cards is a real thing. It makes it easy to cheat if you get stuck. We know it's a real thing. I'm saying, like, who's trying to play Solitaire in real life is what I'm saying. Not me.
People Not on, me. Like, boats, and they're stranded out at sea.
Laura Pone says November 15th, 2019 was last year's cutoff for the Game Awards. And then lastly, Kebab says the reason why the VO is the same is because Rehydrated uses the same audio files from the PS2 version. And let me tell you, as somebody who's playing, that doesn't surprise me. That audio sounds kind of old.
Interesting.
Just the quality.
Makes sense.
I couldn't tell, but there were moments where I was like, oh, like this specific like sound bite sounds weird, or like it'll like be noticeable to me like every once in a while. So that's not super surprising to learn, but that's interesting.
That is interesting. Let me tell you the host for this week. Tuesday, it's me and Tim. Wednesday, Greg and Gary. Thursday, Greg and me. And then Friday is Greg and Tim. Of course, this has been Kinda Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday live right here on twitch.tv/kindafunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. Fran, where can people find you if they want to check out some of what you're doing on a daily basis?
I've streamed for 105 days in a row. That wasn't the plan. I was supposed to take a break. But anyway, we're still doing it. Twitch.tv/FM3_. I've seen a lot of best friends over there, so thanks everybody for coming by and supporting.
Go give Fran a follow. We have a Patreon post show for those that are subbed at the silver level of patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. So stick around for that. Otherwise, until next time, Game Daily.